We are the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short.
Hello, welcome to the Insights from the OCPU Student Survey Series for the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short. This is a new mini in-conversation series that will explore the OCPU study and the impact of its findings for parents, teachers, policymakers, and mental health professionals. I'm Clara Faria, an ACAM Young Person Ambassador, and today I have the pleasure of interviewing Dr. Galit Geulayov and Professor Rohan Orshman, both senior researchers on the OCPU Student Survey. Led by Professor Mina Fazel, OCPU is a large-scale student survey designed to measure the well-being of children and young people. The survey examines mental health, well-being, anxiety, indicators of vulnerability such as bullying and loneliness, school experience, access to services, safety online, and many more areas. It is a joint effort between schools, young people, the NHS, local authorities, and the OCPU research team within the University of Oxford's Department of Psychiatry. Before we start, please be aware that this episode will be focusing on the OCPU findings on self-harm behaviors among children and young people. If you or people you know have been affected by this, please be aware some may find this content triggering. We encourage you to practice self-care. If you are a fan of our in-conversation series, please subscribe on your preferred streaming platform. Let us know how we did with a rating or review and share with friends and colleagues. After that long introduction, welcome Galit and Rohan. It's a really lovely to see you both again. Can you please start with a short intro, giving an overview of what you do?
Thank you for having us, Clara. I'm Galit Geulayov. I'm a researcher at the University of Oxford. My work covers a range of issues related to self-harm in young people. And I'm also the Oxford Self-Harm Research Lead.
Thanks, Galit, and thanks, Clara, for having us on today. My name is Rohan Borschman. I'm a psychologist and a visiting professor from the University of Melbourne in Australia. I'm currently based in the Department of Psychiatry here in Oxford, and a lot of my work focuses on adolescent mental health with a particular interest in self-harm and suicide prevention.
Thank you so much for those introductions. Again, it's a huge pleasure to have you here to talk about such an important topic. Well, to our first question then. Adolescents' loneliness and self-harm have been topics of discussion and concern among young people, parents, and schools in recent years. Can you tell us a bit more about what you measured in relation to self-harm in the OCPU Student Survey? What did you find?
So just to give it some context, OCPU is a repeated survey, and this wave of OCPU took place in 2020. So that was during the first UK COVID-19 lockdown. And our study included secondary school students who were 12 to 18 years old at the time of the survey. Just when we talk about self-harm, we actually refer to an act whereby a person intentionally damages or injures their body in some way, and this is regardless of why they do it. In Oxford 2020, we asked students if they had self-harmed in the year before the survey, and also whether this happened during lockdown. And what we found was that almost 10% of students reported that they self-harmed in the year before the survey, 7% reported that they self-harmed during lockdown.
And did you ask them how they felt about being asked about self-harm?
So this is an important question. Some people worry that talking to young people about self-harm might increase their distress or put ideas in their head. This is an expression that I heard several times before. And we didn't ask this in this survey, but I should stress that students were informed that they didn't have to answer any part of the survey if they didn't wish to do so. Now, it's worth mentioning that other studies which assess this issue show that asking young people about self-harm doesn't increase their distress or self-harm thoughts or behavior, which is a common concern.
Thank you for clarifying such an important point, Galit. And many young people reported worsening of mental health symptoms during the COVID pandemic. And I know you published a paper about self-harm and loneliness during the UK's first lockdown. Can you tell us a bit more about the paper's main findings?
Yeah, so in addition to questions about self-harm, we asked the students how lonely they felt in general, but also whether they felt more or less lonely than before lockdown. About 17% of students reported that they often felt lonely. Almost 8% said that they felt much lonelier than before lockdown. Now, interestingly, about 10% of young people felt that they felt much less lonely than before lockdown. So you can see that lockdown didn't have the same effect on everyone. And we have our colleagues actually published a whole paper on this topic of these students who actually were doing better overall in that first lockdown in the UK. We also found that self-harm during lockdown was more common in those who experienced more intense loneliness, and that feeling much lonelier than before lockdown was related to self-harm during lockdown. So in other words, exacerbation in loneliness during lockdown was related to self-harm during lockdown. Now, this doesn't mean that loneliness causes self-harm. To address this type of question, we would need to use a different study design. So for example, we would want to use a design that in which we measure loneliness and self-harm over time rather than in a single point in time.
And talking a bit more about your analysis, did you find any differences across age and gender? For example, is self-harm more prevalent among young girls? What about youth that identifies as gender non-binary?
So we did. We found that self-harm was more common in girls than in boys. So for example, 10% of girls reported self-harm during lockdown compared to 3% of boys. But I should mention that such gender ratio is quite common in this age group. And also, girls in our survey reported higher rates of loneliness. So for example, 10% of girls reported that they felt much lonelier than before lockdown, and this is compared to 5% of boys. Unfortunately, we didn't ask students about gender identity in this wave of Oxwell, but we addressed this issue in a later wave of the Oxwell study.
And more recently, you both published a paper with some Oxwell colleagues, which examined the different types of support accessed by adolescents following self-harm. What type of support did young people report finding most helpful?
So we asked the school students whether they had accessed a whole range of different types of support in relation to their self-harm. And we divided these types of support into three main groups. So first, there was formal support. This included things like seeing their GP or speaking with a social worker or a psychiatrist, a psychologist or other mental health worker about their self-harm. Second, there were informal sources of support. This was essentially their friends and family members. So perhaps a parent or a sibling or someone in their friendship group. And finally, there were the online or phone-based sources of support. This included things like telephone helplines, online forums, and websites. So in terms of where the adolescents reported seeking the most help, it was actually their friends and family members. Specifically, one in three adolescents who had self-harmed reported seeking help from a friend, and one in four went to a parent for help. But a much smaller proportion reported seeking help from the formal clinical services, with only 7 to 12% reporting accessing such services. And even less commonly reported were the online and phone-based services, which only 4 to 8% of adolescents who had self-harmed reported accessing those. Now, in terms of their perceived helpfulness, it basically mirrored where they had sought help from. So friends and family members were reported as being the most helpful, followed by the clinical services, and finally followed by the online type services.
And Rohan, when looking at the data regarding formal and informal support for adolescents with a history of self-harm, did anything surprise you? Were there any findings that were not in line with your initial hypothesis?
Yeah, definitely. I was quite surprised that the online and phone-based sources of support were used by so few young people. And I say that because, these sources of support are freely available. They're often anonymous. They don't cost anything. And all you need to access them is an internet connection, which is really like oxygen to school students, right? They can't live without it. So that surprised me. And also, I guess, given the huge amount of government funding that's currently being spent on online help services, it does seem from our data that young people are simply not using them very often.
And that leads actually to our next question. I was going to ask, what can you say about the potential implications of your findings?
Sure. Actually, one quite important finding that I didn't mention earlier in terms of which sources of support the students reported seeking is that almost 2 in 5 adolescents who had self-harmed reported that they hadn't actually accessed any type of support. So they'd literally spoken to nobody about it, which is obviously very far from ideal. That was 38% of people who had self-harmed. And perhaps not surprisingly, more than half of these young people, the ones who hadn't reached out for any support, also reported that they hadn't found this very helpful. So keeping it to themselves was typically not seen as a positive or helpful course of action. In terms of implications, to answer your question, one of the things that we really need to explore now with young people is exactly why the online services and the clinical services were accessed so rarely, and also why they're not viewed as being really overly helpful. Because I think it's only by speaking with young people themselves about their priorities and their preferences that we'll be able to understand what they're after and then to design responsive health services to work with the rising number of kids who are turning to self-harm as a coping mechanism.
Definitely. And Galit, would you like to comment about the implications for parents and for peers?
Yeah, so we saw here and also in other studies that many young people who self-harm turn to family and friends for support. So we need to know more about the experiences of these informal support providers. We would want to better understand the impact of support provision for family and friends and also their potential support needs.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Galit and Rohan. And looking to the future, could you share a bit about your plans for the next Oxwell waves regarding self-harm behaviors in adolescents?
Thank you, Clara. We are currently working on a number of studies. In one study, we are looking at the changes in the prevalence of self-harm over time using the multiple waves of Oxwell. And we have four such waves from 2019 all the way to 2023. We also study self-harm in primary school children, which is a group that has been overlooked quite frequently in the context of self-harm. And in another study, we examine the prevalence of exposure to self-harm related content online and how this might be related to self-harm behavior.
Thanks, Gelit. Also, we're planning to examine what we're calling the school experience of adolescents who self-harm. And that will involve taking quite a deep dive into the Oxwell data to look at the ways that kids with a history of self-harm navigate the school experience compared to their peers who don't self-harm. And I guess this will include looking at areas such as how much they feel a sense of belonging to the school community and their sense of agency in the school, their friendship circles and experiences of bullying. And also any experiences of detention or exclusion, and even how safe they feel at school, which is quite important. So there's a lot to explore there, but I think we're likely to find some very interesting differences.
I'm really curious to see those findings when they are out. Thank you so much for your time once again. And for more details on Dr. Galit Ghiulayev and Professor Rohan Orshman, please visit the Oxwell and AKM websites, www.akm.org and oxwell.org. Also follow us on our Twitter at AKM. AKM is spelled ACAMH. You can listen to other podcasts in the Insights from the Oxford Student Service series, including episodes on friendship, self-harm, sleep, and more. And don't forget to follow us on your preferred streaming platform. Let us know if you enjoyed the podcast with a rating or review, and do share with friends and colleagues. We have also linked resources for young people or caregiving young people who have experienced self-harm in our landing page. You can access those resources below the podcast.